Well, it's wonderful to be here. I've shared at some length during the weekend of some significant times here in my past. I know we're under time constraints today, and so I don't want to lather up too much in the front end with personal comments. I did make a promise to Reverend Rick Brauner, the RUF International Campus Minister at Clemson, to thank you for over 20 years of your support for the international student ministry work at Clemson. So thank you so much on behalf of Rick. I wanted to bear that message. Because I want you to get a sweeping overview of what the Bible has to say about hospitality, and also because we have time constraints, I'm going to move very, very fast. Some of you are like me, and you've got to take notes. You can't take notes. I won't stop for you to take notes. You'll never get, don't frustrate yourself. Here's the encouragement. This entire presentation with an audio track can be accessed over the internet. So on the front table up here, I've got some copies of a little booklet that RUF International publishes that I've written. It's a primer for churches to become more welcoming, not just international students, but how to become a welcoming church, especially to internationals. This is available. There's some quantities here. Also is my business card with my email. So if any of you would like to revisit what we're going to go over today and slow it down a little bit, please come get my business card. I got tickled at one presbytery meeting that one teaching elder came up with his iPhone and started clicking photos of the slides because he could not write notes fast enough. So I want you to have access to this, but today we're going to move very fast in view of the time. We want to talk about how to be a welcoming church and to welcome and do missions at your doorstep. We will talk a little bit about international student ministry, but I do want to make some comments about things that God has taught me as a pastor about how to have a more welcoming church. I've mentioned during this weekend that we need to look at the fields because there are now over 800,000 international students in the U.S. Mel mentioned RUF International does ministry. People get confused a lot of time. International does not mean overseas. International means international students. And the U.S. has more internationals than any other country in the world. And quite specially, the PCA is one of only three denominations that has made a national commitment to international student ministry. And it almost was put to bed. So my labor over the last 10 years is to try to build up this ministry. And now you can know that your denomination is, other than the Southern Baptists and the Missouri Synod Lutherans, the only denomination that has made a denominational national commitment to this extraordinarily strategic mission field. Here's what I want to start with. And it's very important. As I look at the Bible, I see at least two models of biblical witness and evangelism. The challenge is most Christians only think of one. One of the models is the apostolic model. And God calls some Christians and extraordinarily gifts them to become missionaries in the traditional foreign missions way, which is what I call the apostolic model. But all Christians are commanded to be hospitable. Now you hear the difference? Some are called. So everybody shouldn't leave a missions conference weekend with residual guilt that you don't serve overseas. Some are called. But all Christians are commanded to make room in their lives for unbelievers. You know the apostolic well. You leave your home, go into the world, leave your family, your friends, your familiar culture. You cross over geographic and cultural lines. We honor our missionaries because they make great personal sacrifices. And they have to learn a foreign language. They go through language and culture study. And it can take many, many years to become effective and fruitful as a foreign missionary. They have to learn how to embody God's word and their life by word and deed in ways that will respect their host culture. It is a very extraordinary calling. And the history of the church says the apostolic calling is an extraordinary calling. I'm not speaking of writing scripture, but the functional apostolic calling in the sense of foreign missionary. Look at the kind of diagram here. I was telling Paul Settle, I learned some of this from my missions mentor at Westminster Seminary. Stephen may be one of the first missionaries in a sense, because when we read the early chapters of Acts, we find a very vital, attractive, growing Jerusalem church. But they hit a cultural wall. And there was, remember, the problem of the distribution of bread to the Greek-speaking widows. And so those seven godly men were chosen, we call them deacons or proto-deacons, to help in the distribution of the food to the Greek-speaking widows. Interestingly, they all have Greek names. So they probably were providentially prepared by God to relate well across cultures. And sure enough, not only did they distribute bread, but also the gospel. And the gospel began to spread into all Judea and Samaria, as Acts 1:8 says. But then you hit a major cultural wall, which was the wall between the Israelites, the Jews, and the Gentiles. And God had sovereignly, providentially, and extraordinarily prepared the Apostle Paul, who at that time was Saul, the murderer of Christians, to be bilingual, bicultural, trained under a rabbi, Gamaliel, but also one with Roman citizenship. Other than the fact that he wasn't a believer and was killing Christians, he was already providentially prepared to get converted and to become the great apostle to the Gentiles. Philip became the evangelist of Samaria and also led the Ethiopian to the Lord. Now, Stephen, we've talked about Cyril. Who knows who Cyril is? His name is preserved in the word Cyrillic. He had a great burden for the Slavic people, and he realized they did not have a written language, and so in a kind of an anachronistic kind of way, he was sort of like Wycliffe Bible translators, but Cyril was the great apostle, the apostolic missionary to the Slavic people, including Russia, Hudson Taylor in China. And again, the question then is, Lord, me? Well, we ought to ask that question, because God raises up from churches like yours people who have been given the gifts and the background and the preparation and the intelligence to prepare for foreign mission service. But here's the point. It's a both and. Some are called to be apostolic foreign missionaries, but we're all commanded to be hospitable. So Jesus was the only perfect missionary. As you visit with your missionaries, remember, they're not perfect. Jesus was perfect as a missionary because he was sent by the Father. I mean, your pastor shared this in his inaugural address for the weekend. He is the paradigm of missions. He was sent by the Father. He was the Word made flesh. He was God's eternal Son who made his dwelling among us. His life was full of grace and truth. And he became like us in every way except for our sinfulness and made the ultimate sacrifice. So he is the gold standard of missions. And we should always honor him as that. As Hebrews 3 says, he is the apostle and the high priest, we confess. So he is the model of apostolic witness. Now, my missions mentor, Harvey Kahn, professor at Westminster, used to say, the problem with the Christian church today is we have an Olympic model of Christian service. We think that missionaries are the gold medalists, and vocational Christians like pastors are the silver medalist, and everybody else is the bronze medalist. So we all get medals, but some get better medals than others. Well, the point is, this is totally unbiblical. And yet, in a popular way, we sometimes put missionaries and pastors and vocational Christians on a pedestal. The truth is, it's a question of gift and calling. I was trained as an engineer. Why am I a pastor? Because God had gifted and called me to be a pastor. It wasn't that I was different than anybody else, but by God's grace, I was differently gifted. So we're all to serve the Lord. And so I think in part, we've gotten confused by the Great Commission. And the first person to put me onto this was a godly pastor named Paul Settle. He doesn't even remember it. I heard him preach a sermon at a General Assembly. I think it was in Fort Lauderdale. And he challenged all the denomination to realize that there's only one imperative verb in the Great Commission. And it's not the one you think it is. And I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble by kind of putting Christians on the spot and letting them answer. So let me not put you there. The command in the Great Commission is not go. How many times have you said, God commands go? Well, yeah, he commands us to go different places. Charleston, International Student Ministry, Greenville. The only imperative verb is a one word in the Greek, but you have to translate it into English in two words. Make disciples. The other three verbs are all participles. So it really kind of goes like this. Going, make disciples. Baptizing, and teaching them to obey. Now, if you think about this for a moment, it makes perfect sense. Because we're not all called to go to the same place. We're not all called, except the pastors, to officiate baptisms, to connect new believers into a multi-generational community of God's people. Not all of us are teachers or teach the same way, but we're all called to make disciples, right? So the imperative is not go, but make disciples. Now, I like to call hospitality the biblical model of witness for the rest of us. And I can tell you, if you listen carefully, God may deliver you from the sweaty palms of the thought of sharing your faith with somebody. So let's talk about it. I'm not going to belabor this again, but the ladies heard a message yesterday on the hospitality of Abraham and Sarah. Because when they welcomed strangers in Genesis 18, those who had no place, they found their own place as believing partners in God's plan. Here's where my personal discovery came. I shared this with a couple of people yesterday, encouraged by Paul Settle, preceded by the Lord's open door. In 1980, I left South Carolina to plant a church in Bryan College Station, Texas, near Texas A&M. And when I got there, the church began to grow in ways that were different than they thought the church would grow. We began to grow with young families from Texas A&M. And so the impact was every fall, we had 200 new family units visit the church. Or singles, just 200 units visit the church. And every spring, one-third of the congregation graduated and left. Well, you know, I'm an old engineer. I started doing the math, and I realized we're going to die. Because we're not growing from the long-standing residents of the town that they anticipated. And so I went to my elder board, our session, and they made it very clear by not only a majority vote, but a unanimous vote, we would not do visitation evangelism. Now, in 1980, any church in the PCA that was doing evangelism was doing a well-known, I won't mention the name, form of visitation evangelism. And all of my elders said, we're not doing it. And that put me in a pastoral crisis. So I took a brief summer sabbatical, and in an incidental reference in a book that I read, the comment was made Michael Green, New Testament evangelism, he said, the secret to the rapid spread of the New Testament church was not the heroic efforts of the apostles, but after the apostles had planted the gospel, it was the ordinary Christians who made room in their lives for their unbelieving friends that led to the rapid spread of the church. Wow. And so what we began to do is to put in place hospitality systems in the church, and the church began to grow. I'll share some of those for your church leaders at the end of my talk. So what's a biblical meaning of hospitality? We went over this briefly the other day. It's a combination of two Greek words, philo and xenia. Philo is like family love, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Xenia, you know from the negative term xenophobia, which is the fear or loathing or judgment on foreigners or immigrants. You put these together and you get a good picture of what hospitality is. It's to show family love to complete strangers. And you go, I can't do that. And it's hard. Family love, familial love to complete strangers or foreigners. But you know what? That's the kind of love Jesus had for you. You are a stranger to God's kingdom. You had no God, without hope in this world, and through his blood, he didn't call you strangers, he calls you friends and family. So the gospel really propels us to reflect the love we've received, where Jesus doesn't call us strangers or foreigners, but makes us his friends. I say to people that hospitality is a grace that transforms strangers into friends. Wouldn't you love a church like that? You have a wonderfully warm church, but wouldn't it be great to have all our PCA churches be full of the grace that transforms strangers into friends? That's hospitality. Okay, I took an extra look. I don't think the Shorter Catechism ever mentioned hospitality. I'm not a Westminster divine, and I'm not pretending to be, but I did write a question and answer on what is hospitality. It's to welcome strangers graciously in Jesus' name, to treat them as your honored guest, to invite them into your home and life, and to offer them a place of safety and healing. Some very important concepts there. Welcoming, inviting, honoring guests, not just tolerating them, offering them a place of safety and healing. The word hospitality is related to the words hospice and hospital and hotel. Well, I just love that picture. Elaine and I love having internationals to our home. The first distortion of hospitality is entertainment. Jesus warned about this. When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers, or relatives, or rich neighbors. They may invite you back, and you will be repaid. Real quid pro quo. No grace in that. I invite you over, you invite me over. There's no grace in that. We're just networking. As I tell people, hospitality is not LinkedIn, it's invite in. Okay? I did this the other day. I'll get in trouble before I leave. What's the difference between cultural hospitality and Southern hospitality? Southern hospitality can serve the reputation of the host. I love your tomato aspect, Lucille. But biblical hospitality focuses on the needs of the guest. It's guest-focused, not host-focused. What's the power of hospitality? Well, you see it in front of you. Every time you come to the Lord's table and see the gospel visually that you've heard auditorily, you are experiencing God's hospitality. God has spread a table before you in the presence of your enemies. One of the reasons it's powerful is you're responding to God's sovereignty. It's my conviction, and I'm not just talking about internationals. God has already put people in your daily, ordinary life who are going to respond to the gospel. What we do is we set up artificial relationships And this is why my elders in Texas didn't like visitation. When you go into someone else's territory and they're complete strangers and you share the gospel with them, it does give you cold, sweaty palms. But when you invite people into your own home, you're responding to God's sovereignty with the people who God has already put in your life and who may be responsive. You're also inviting people under God's covenant. By treating strangers as extended family, you're including them under God's covenant. I love this picture at the bottom. The first time I went to China, I was told, do not bring any Christian literature out of your wallet in Tiananmen Square, or there'll be a paddy wagon there in 10 minutes. These two young men who were graduate students at Georgia Tech, they entered our home, and within 3 minutes they said, what is that? And I said, that's our family Bible. And I explained all about that. And they said, can we have copies of the Bible? The difference between Tiananmen Square, me on their territory, and their coming into my home was very dramatic. You don't invade other people's homes or cultures. Biblical hospitality reflects the two great sacred meals of the Bible. It's like a picture of the Passover or the Lord's Supper. I call hospitality like a New Testament court of the Gentiles, because it's the closest an unbeliever can come to the Lord's table without repenting and believing. Hospitality also reflects God's special concern for the resident foreigner. I'm amazed at God's immigration policy when the Israelites got to Canaan, because they were in the only authorized holy war in history told to exterminate all the Canaanites. And so what were they kind of pre-programmed to think when a foreigner came to their borders? Oh, we're supposed to kill them off. No, the Lord said, you're supposed to welcome the foreigner. You were foreigners in Egypt. And so the Lord has a special concern. What the problem is what happened with the lawyer with Jesus. Lord, who is my neighbor? I know the commandment is to love my neighbor as myself, but can I shrink my neighborhood to people just like me? Who is my neighbor? And he told a story, remember, of the Samaritan. And all the good, moral, Jewish, religious people kind of passed that victim by the side, but the Samaritan. And so when it came to answer the question, the Lord asked him a question, who do you think was a neighbor? And he couldn't even bring himself to say Samaritan, the one who had mercy on him. The point of the Lord is you can't define a neighbor. You can only be a good neighbor. We get a foretaste of God's kingdom when we invite people who are different than us. And my prayer, someone said to me, Al, no matter how many RUF Internationals are started under your leadership, bye choir, thank you for serving us. No matter how many RUF Internationals you start, one of the fruits of your ministry may be to get PCA people to invite people different than them into their homes and churches. Wouldn't it be wonderful if our churches really began to be a foretaste of the kingdom of God? To be diverse and from drawing people from all walks of life. Jesus was the rejected resident foreigner. I sometimes greet churches by saying, I greet you in the name of God's foreigner. He came to his own people, and his own people rejected him. But to all who received him, he gave the power to become children of God. Sometimes we're like the lawyer who says, who is my neighbor? And he says, you got to be a good neighbor. You can't define a neighbor. And one day we will stand before him and say, Lord, when did we see you? And he will say, when you welcomed the foreigner or didn't welcome the foreigner, you did or did not welcome me. So Jesus is the ultimate resident alien who came among us from heaven. The gospel should motivate our hospitality because we ourselves were once aliens to God's kingdom. Who is the most compassionate for those who have no place? I wish I had time to tell you a little test that I did in a church. I went to a friend's church, and I didn't tell him I was coming, so he couldn't ask me to do a prayer or something. I stood in the foyer with my family and watched to see who would greet us. I'm going to tell you. The greeters came by, though, you know, the lapel ribbons, you know, and the people giving out bulletins came by. There were only two people in that church for you who greeted us, and you know what? They'd all been members less than 6 months. They'd all been members less than 6 months. So those who remember what it is to be new are those who are compassionate for those who are outsiders. Great recruitment reminder. All right, do you remember that you had once had no admittance into God's kingdom, but as Ephesians 2 says, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have now been brought near through the blood of Christ. You know, I don't want to venture into politics, but we ought to check our attitudes on the whole big immigration debate right now, because every one of us has been supernaturalized into God's kingdom. Every one of us was a foreigner. Every one of us was an exile to God's kingdom. The second distortion of hospitality is entitlement. In the most affluent part of Atlanta, I used to call this drive-by mercy. Gather all your resources, go to a needy part of town, drop off all the supplies, and leave as quickly as possible. But congratulate yourself that you've been a merciful person, and polish that halo. This is an entitlement mentality. Remember that hospitality is to treat a stranger as if they were what? Family. So there's a dignity and a relationship. Jesus came among us as our elder brother. He didn't just come to save us. He came to adopt us into God's family. He's our kinsman redeemer. He's not just our redeemer, he's our kinsman redeemer. And so as we relate to strangers, we need to relate with a relationship of kinsman as well as one who bears the gospel of Jesus Christ. Here's some historical case studies that you might want to look at. The first one is the biblical cities of refuge. There were places in Israel where strangers could flee if they were under accusation of the law. People often don't remember that Reformation Geneva was one of the biggest refugee centers in Europe, especially after the French Protestants were ejected from France. The University of Geneva was founded to train ministers to go into church planting in France, and they called the diplomas death certificates. One famous refugee in Geneva was named John Knox and trained under Calvin and went back to Scotland, and here we are today. Reformation Geneva. Some of you need to look at the story of Le Chambon, France. There were more Jewish children sheltered in Le Chambon, France, and the Vichy area of France than any place in Europe, right under the nose of SS headquarters. They were educated across the street from SS headquarters in Le Chambon. And there's a remarkable film called Weapons of the Spirit, where a Jewish journalist goes back and asks the people, why did you take all of these Jewish children, thousands of Jewish children, in to every family? And they thought they had done nothing heroic. And then he went to their worship service, and he heard their hymns reciting how they had been persecuted after the repeal of the Edict of Nantes. And he realized these people had been persecuted for their faith. And they instinctively received the little Jewish children in because it was part of their story as well. And it's part of our gospel story. The film is called Weapons of the Spirit. Remarkable film. And modern case studies, Le Brie, Francis Schaeffer and Edith, created a space for seekers in Europe. The La Arche community, some of you know the name of Henry Nouwen, Roman Catholic priest who was involved with the community for the disabled in Canada. All right, what caused the decline in biblical hospitality? People don't realize that not only did doctrine decline in the medieval age, but also practice. And so we see that in the early centuries, Christianity practiced hospitality. I'm moving fast now because I just looked at the clock. Third John is all about hospitality and welcoming the foreigner, welcoming the missionary. The Roman emperor, pagan, chastised the pagan priest because he saw the hospitality of the Christian church. And he said, these impious Galileans support not only their own people, but ours as well. The monasteries were welcoming communities for refugees. As I quoted yesterday, one of the plaques found in one of these ancient monasteries was, we always welcome strangers as angels, just in case. But Calvin lamented the ancient hospitality is unknown to us, and inns, like hotels, now supply the accommodations for strangers. What's happened is biblical hospitality that the church used to practice has been co-opted by the hospitality industry in the form of hotels, but also hospitals and hospice care. So homes and churches have gone from being places of welcome, and we've lost those ministries to institutions. Here's what's happened. I wanted to get to this slide. I'm going to go fast, but from being communities, churches being communities, we become commodity dispensing institutions. From welcoming strangers, we now try to develop marketing. Second president, you see the trend? From welcoming strangers to marketing strategies, from a place to welcome and serve to homes as a place of personal privacy. To show and tell the gospel through personal relationships? No. Hire professionals to show and tell the gospel. Members who are ministers? No. Christians are Christian consumers, and it's the ordained people who are supposed to give all the ministry. Elders used to be shepherds of the flock. Now the temptation is to become board members. This is what we've lost in the loss and decline of hospitality. All right, international students, quickly, just to introduce you here. We meet meet internationals who come among us. Mel, I want you to wave bloody murder at me. I think I've got 2 minutes. We welcome scholars from all nations into Christian homes and churches. We do their cultural parties. We observe their holidays because the universities do not. We invite them to go on excursions with local churches, like the International Lake Day, which a mission church in Atlanta started 10 years ago. Secondly, we explore the gospel with internationals. Our model here is Paul at Ephesus. He was kicked out of the house of worship, so he goes and rents an educational hall called the Hall of Tyrannus and does daily discussions in the Hall of Tyrannus. I have to tell you about this young man. He's from Iran. He said, do you know who my engineering professor was in Iran? I said, no. He said, Ahmadinejad. The man on the right was a Reformed seminary student. You can't take a seminary class and get direct experience talking to a Muslim student from Iran. That's our joy. And finally, when we have internationals who become Christians, we equip them to become servant leaders. Okay, in your church, real quick, how are we doing? Got a minute. Do you call newcomers visitors or guests? Visitors are coming on their own steam, looking for a church home. But it's most likely that 80% of the people who are new to your church have been invited by a church member. Call them your honored guests. We welcome our guests. We have to change our vocabulary. It's an old vocabulary. We welcome our visitors this morning. We welcome those who are our guests this morning. This is what Disney does at Disneyland. Shouldn't we do this at least that good? Do they get a pastoral letter? That's a good thing. There were people in one of my churches who would have never done visitation evangelism, but they knew how to write beautiful handwritten notes. And so guests in the church received a handwritten note. And people would come back and say, can I meet Mrs. Smith? She wrote me the nicest note. What we often do is we get people to make professions of faith and we try to figure out how to assimilate them. Start assimilating the guests, helping them make friends. I'm going to skip that one. And I'm going to stop there. I hope if you want to learn more, you'll come get one of the booklets. If you want to see this at slower speed, slower audio track, you'll come get my card. I'll be glad to point you in the right direction. I pray that something in all of this will really germinate so that Second Pres, which is already so welcoming, will flourish in biblical hospitality.